Still, she wasn't surprised by the evident dismay she saw from some of them today. Obviously, the men behind those particular faces suspected that they weren't going to care for the decision she'd reached today. And they're right, she thought. In fact, they're far righter than they could even guess at this point. As all of you are aware, she continued after several moments, King Caleb of Carus has sent us his own first counselor as his personal emissary. I am aware that some members of the council felt it would be imprudent, shall we say, to receive Earl Greyharbor, or, for that matter, any representative of Carus. I'm also aware of the reasons they had for feeling that way, but, my lords, even the soundest of ships, and even the most skilled of captains, cannot survive a storm simply by ignoring it. I'm sure we would all prefer calm to storm, but we live in the times in which we live, and we can but pray for God's guidance to make the best choices we may in the face of the challenges the world sends us. At this time, again, as all of you are aware, we remain technically at war with Carus. Unfortunately, that war has not prospered, and I suspect it will surprise none of you to discover that the decision to join that war in the first place was never truly our own. Several counselors, including her uncle, stirred uneasily in their chairs, and two or three pairs of eyes swiveled sideways to Father Carlson. The priest, for his part, only sat with his hands folded on the table in front of him, head cocked slightly to one side, while he listened to the queen and watched her with bright, alert eyes. In fact, of course, she continued, Chisholm agreed to join the League of Coruscant and the Princedom of Emerald only at the strong urging of the Chancellor of the Knights of the Temple Lands. The Knights desired us to assist Prince Hector against Harald of Carus for reasons which no doubt seemed good to them, but which, let us be honest here among ourselves, my lords, were never truly critical or even relevant to Chisholm's own interests. We had no just cause for enmity with Carus on our own part, and we had many reasons for regarding our ally Hector with suspicion and caution. Nonetheless, we acceded to Chancellor Trenaire's urging when Archbishop Jerome delivered his message to us on behalf of the Knights of the Temple Lands. Her uncle, she observed, winced visibly at her repeated use of Knights of the Temple Lands. She wished that could have come to her as a surprise. There were several reasons for that, but being honest once again, the primary reason was fear. Fear of what the Knights might do to Chisholm if we declined to do as they requested in this instance. She paused with a wintry smile, which should have turned every square inch of exposed skin in that council chamber blue. Her uncle's face had tightened at the word fear, and one or two other faces had turned into blank walls. Well, that's scarcely a surprise, she told herself tartly. She was aware of a bright, singing tension deep inside her. It was a sensation she'd felt before, the taut recognition that she danced upon the edge of a sword. Every monarch must know that feeling sometimes, at least, she thought. There had been times, like the signing of Duke Threehill's death warrant, when she'd faced it, rendered her decision, and then retired to her private chambers to throw up. Those times had been more common in the first year or two after she took the crown, however. Now it was something to be embraced. The proof she was doing her job, meeting the challenges the world sent to her. And, she admitted to herself, there was something almost addictive to it, and the hard-won knowledge that she was good at the task to which birth had called her. To the awareness that the issues she grappled with, the decisions she made, were important. That she had to get them right if she was going to meet her father's spirit with the ability to look into his eyes without shame. It wasn't the power itself which gave her that sense of being alive, so much as it was the determination to do her very best, the satisfaction she took from knowing that she had. It had to be the same sort of emotion a star athlete felt when he pushed himself ruthlessly in training to reach a higher plateau of performance. The satisfaction he felt within himself, not the one which came from the cheering adulation of his fans. Or perhaps, as she often thought, it must be akin to what a champion swordsman felt in that first breathless moment when he stepped into the lists at a competition. Or, she admitted to herself, what a duelist feels like when his opponent draws his sword.